This episode of The Deep Dive is brought to you by Wadadley Solar LLC, making sure your solar investment actually pays you back.
So when you picture the New York City skyline, you know, you see it in movies, on postcards, it feels so majestic, almost static.
Yeah, right. It looks permanent.
But if you actually get up there, I mean, if you zoom in and stand on one of those flat rooftops, you realize it is not a postcard.
Not at all. It's a machine. It's loud. It's chaotic. You've got chillers, fans, vents, pipes everywhere.
It is definitely not the empty slab of concrete you might imagine.
It's prime real estate, sure, but it's cluttered real estate.
Exactly. And for the people trying to build our next generation of energy infrastructure, I'm talking about the solar developers, that roof isn't just a place to work. It's a battlefield.
That's a great way to put it. It's shared, it's contested, and like we're about to find out today, it is constantly changing right under your feet.
Which is the perfect setup for today's deep dive. We are looking at a set of field notes, really, from the front lines of this exact battle.
Yeah, we're analyzing a case study called You Can't Build Here, and it comes from a guy named Alexis Lewis. And honestly, this isn't just about solar panels. It's a masterclass in crisis management for when, you know, the real world stops matching the blueprints.
Okay, before we dive into the crisis itself, I want to talk about our guide. Who is Alexis Lewis? Why should we be listening to his take on this?
So Alexis runs a company called Wadadley Solar, and his credentials, they sort of act as a trust filter for this whole story.
Yeah.
He's a senior construction project manager.
So he runs the logistics.
Runs the show. But he's also a level one thermographer and a NABCE certified solar inspector.
Whoa. Okay, let's pause there. You just threw out an acronym, NABCEP. Unpack that for us. Is that a big deal?
Oh, it's the big deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
It stands for the North American Board Certified Energy Practitioners.
Okay.
It's basically the gold standard for certification in the solar world.
Yeah.
If you're NABCEP certified, you're not just a guy with a drill. You understand the physics, the electrical code, the safety, the whole nine yards.
And what about the thermographer part? That sounds very high tech.
It is. It's all about thermal imaging.
Yeah.
So it's the ability to look at a solar array with an infrared camera and see hotspots.
Ah, so you're seeing problems the naked eye can't. Inefficiencies, faults.
Exactly. And it speaks to his whole mission, which he calls life cycle management. He's not just thinking about tightening bolts today. He's thinking about how that asset, that power plant, performs for the next 20 years.
So he's looking at the whole project through a much wider lens. That's really good context. All right, so walk us through the mission here. What were they trying to build?
The project was a roughly 750 kilowatt DC ballasted rooftop system.
750 kilowatts. Okay, give us a sense of scale. Is that a lot?
It's massive. I mean, for a benchmark, your typical residential solar system on a suburban house is maybe, what, 5 to 8 kilowatts?
Right.
So we're talking about a system that's about 100 times bigger than that. This isn't a few panels. It's a commercial power plant on a roof.
And I'm guessing it wasn't just one nice, clean, square roof.
No, of course not. This is New York City. It's a complex site spread across multiple connected rooftops. And here's the really crucial part for you to understand.
Okay.
The project was a go. It was green light. The design was done, permits secured, utility approval signed.
Which, as anyone in construction knows, that part is a nightmare. That can take months.
Sometimes years. So when you finally hit that mobilization phase, where you're actually sending crews and cranes to the site, momentum is everything, and your spending is at its peak. The meter is running.
So the stage is set. The solar crew gets up to the roof. They've got their drawings. They're ready to start laying out the equipment. And then the record scratches.
And the ghost machine appears.
I love that phrase, but it must be terrifying for a project manager. What happened?
So the solar crew lead is approached by the mechanical project manager, the HVAC guy. And he doesn't just come over to say hello. He points at a section of the roof and delivers this blunt message. You can't build here. Our equipment is going in this zone.
And I'm assuming he was pointing to a spot that on the solar blueprints was completely empty.
Totally empty. The solar drawing showed clear roof space. The reality on the ground showed a massive air handling unit that had just been dropped there or was about to be. It's a classic case of two different maps for the same territory.
Okay, so this is usually where the yelling starts. The temptation to just argue, you know, my drawings say this, I was here first, it must be overwhelming.
It's the default human reaction, right?
Yeah.
Fight or flight. But this is where Alexis Lewis really shows the difference between an amateur and a professional response.
Okay.
He talks about the difference between trade interference, which is just the physical problem, and the crisis, which is all about how you handle it. And his method starts with something he calls immediate escalation.
Immediate escalation.
Right. The crew lead didn't argue. He didn't try to negotiate. He didn't guess. He just picked up the phone and called Alexis.
That seems simple. Call the boss. But why is that so critical?
It's all about the cost reality. And this is the part I think applies to almost any industry, not just solar. It's about eroding the margin.
Let's drill down on that. Margin erosion. What does that actually look like in real time on a roof? Why is just standing still so expensive?
Think about the burn rate. You've got a crew of, say, 10 or 15 specialized installers. In a union town like New York, your labor costs are incredibly high. Let's just estimate that crew cost the company, what, maybe $2,000 an hour?
$2,000 an hour. Wow.
And that adds up fast. So if they spend 4 hours standing around watching their boss argue with the HVAC guy, you've just burned $8,000.
And gotten zero work done.
Zero panels installed. The money just, it evaporated.
And in the solar industry, those profit margins are already razor thin, aren't they? There's no slush fund for just standing around.
Extremely thin. That $8,000 might have been the entire projected profit for that week of work.
Mm-hmm.
So Alexis's job is twofold. Protect the owner's long-term investment, yes, but also keep his installation crew productive right now.
Okay, so there's a financial time bomb ticking, but let me play devil's advocate for a second. It's a 750-kilowatt roof. It's huge. Why is one air conditioner such a big deal? Can't you just, you know, shift the panels 5 feet to the left?
And that's the intuitive thought, right? It's just furniture, move it over.
But this gets us to the most technical and I think the most fascinating part of this story. This was a ballasted system.
Ballasted. We hear that term. Explain it for the non-engineers. Why does that make moving things so hard?
So most people think solar panels are bolted directly into the roof. You drill a hole, put in a lag bolt.
Right.
But on a big commercial roof, you don't want to drill thousands of holes. Every hole is a potential leak. So instead, you use a ballasted system. The racks just sit on top of the roof and you hold them down with heavy concrete blocks.
We interrupt this podcast with a quick reminder. Solar systems that aren't inspected don't perform as designed. Annual inspections protect output, safety, and payback. Wadadley Solar LLC, serving the U.S., Antigua, Guyana.
So it's gravity doing all the work.
Yeah.
It's gravity versus wind. And that's the catch. Wind is weird.
Right.
When it hits a building, it doesn't hit it evenly. It whips around the corners. It creates these vortices at the edges. So the uplift force, the suction trying to rip those panels off the roof, is way different at the corner than it is in the middle.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Yeah.
The engineer has calculated exactly how many concrete blocks you need for a panel right here versus a panel over there.
Precisely. A panel in the middle of the roof might only need 2 blocks. You move that same panel 10 feet closer to the edge, it might need 6 blocks because the wind forces are so much higher there.
Or worse.
Or worse, you might be putting all that extra weight on a part of the roof deck, the steel beams underneath, that just isn't strong enough to hold it.
So if the crew lead on the ground just says, eh, let's just slide it over without doing the math.
The whole system could blow off the roof in the next hurricane. Or the roof itself could collapse. It's a massive safety and liability problem.
Okay, just move it is officially off the table. That answers my question. So you're stuck. You can't build where you planned, you can't move without new engineering, and standing still is costing you thousands an hour. What did Alexis do?
He calls his strategy stabilizing the burn.
Mm-hmm.
It's a triage mentality. He realized he couldn't solve the HVAC conflict in that minute.
The air conditioner wasn't going anywhere.
Right. So he separated the execution from the dispute.
What did that look like, practically?
He looked at the roof layout, mm-hmm. and he found what he called unaffected zones. Remember, it's a big site with multiple roofs.
Mm-hmm.
So he told the crew, forget zone A. We're done here for now. Everyone, move all your gear to zone C and start building there.
He just pivoted. He kept the assembly line moving.
Exactly. He kept the labor productive. The meter was still running, sure, but now they're actually installing panels again. The margin stops eroding.
And in the meantime, I assume he's off the roof fighting the paperwork war because that HVAC unit is still sitting there.
Yes. While the crew is safely working in another zone, Alexis starts the engineering integrity phase. He takes the new reality, the location of this surprise machine, and he sends it back to the structural engineers.
Basically, here's the new map, rerun all the math.
Exactly, and he's very clear in his notes. We don't shift ballast layouts in the field without confirming load paths and compliance. He held the line on safety, even under all that pressure.
Okay, but there's a commercial angle here too. If that air conditioner takes up space, that means fewer solar panels, right? which means the whole system produces less energy.
Correct. And that is a huge contractual problem. The solar company promised a 750-kilowatt system. If they only deliver 740-kilowatt, the client could sue for under-delivery.
So how do you protect your company from that? How do you prove it wasn't your fault?
You document everything, and you document it as a scope adjustment. This is a really crucial distinction Alexis makes. You don't just eat the loss.
I see.
You formally document that the conditions of the site changed and that change forced a reduction in the system size.
So that shifts the responsibility from the solar company back to the building owner or whoever's in charge of the mechanical team.
Exactly. It turns a failure to deliver into a change order. It sounds like a small paperwork detail, but it can save your company tens of thousands of dollars in penalties.
It really feels like so much of this job isn't actually about tightening bolts. It's about managing information. Which brings me to the big question. How does this even happen? How do you miss a giant machine on a drawing?
Well, Alexis did a root cause analysis, and the answer is surprisingly mundane.
It wasn't sabotage.
No, not at all. Oh. It wasn't even, you know, gross incompetence. It was a late-stage mechanical revision.
Someone changed their mind at the last minute.
The mechanical engineers updated their drawings to add this unit. They send those new drawings to the general contractor, maybe to the owner, but, and this is the silo problem you see in construction all the time. Nobody thought to forward that email to the solar team.
Different trades, different drawings, one shared roof.
That's the quote from the source. The solar team was working off revision 3 of the plans, and the HVAC team was working off revision 4. Both teams were right, according to the paper in their hands.
But the roof only obeys the laws of physics, not the paper.
Exactly. And Alexis makes this really interesting point about how this is almost inevitable. He basically says, if you work on commercial rooftops in a place like New York, you should just assume your drawings are wrong.
He calls these surprises inevitable.
He does. He says most rooftop conflicts are not technical failures. The panels work fine. They are coordination failures that surface too late.
And surface too late is the key phrase. If they had caught this 3 weeks earlier, it's a 5-minute fix in a software program.
Right. It costs $10 to fix it in AutoCAD. It costs $10,000 to fix it on the roof.
So let's recap this. If we boil down the Lewis approach, what are the main takeaways for someone listening to this?
Okay, so 3 main things. Number 1, separate execution from dispute.
Don't let a paperwork problem stop the physical work. Redirect your people.
Keep the factory running. The second you stop moving, you're losing money.
Okay. Number 2 was protect the design.
That's the integrity piece. Never, ever compromise on safety or engineering just to solve a schedule problem. Don't freelance the physics. You need that stamped letter from an engineer.
And number 3, stabilize the burn.
Which is the financial discipline. You have to understand that every minute of indecision is coming directly out of your pocket, out of your profit margin.
You know, reading through all this, I have a totally new respect for what's happening up on those roofs. We talk so much about the technology panel, efficiency, battery chemistry, but we rarely talk about these soft costs.
That's a huge issue in the industry right now. The hardware, the panels themselves, they're getting cheaper and cheaper. Mm-hmm. But the cost of labor, permitting, and mistakes, those costs aren't going down.
They're going up.
In a lot of cases, yeah. So if we want to build out this green future, it's not just about needing better scientists. We need better project managers.
We need people who can navigate the chaos without losing their cool. The source material sums it up perfectly, I think. It says how a PM responds determines whether a surprise stays an operational issue or becomes a commercial problem.
I love that distinction. An operational issue is a headache. You got to make some calls, update a drawing.
But a commercial problem is a loss. You lost money, you lost trust, you might have lost the client.
And Alexis, in this case, converted a potential commercial disaster into just an operational headache.
So before we wrap, let's make sure people know where to find more of this kind of insight, because this isn't from a textbook, this is from the field.
Absolutely. So these notes came from Alexis Lewis. He shares this kind of thing on LinkedIn. He runs Wadadley Solar.
And we want to get that name right. The source was very clear on the pronunciation.
Yes. It's spelled W-A-D-D-A-D-L-I, but it's pronounced Wadadley Solar.
Wadadley. Got it.
Yeah. And his whole life cycle approach is something I think a lot of people in the industry, especially young PMs, could learn a lot from.
There was one final thing in the notes, right? A challenge he left for his peers.
Yes. He ends it with a question for other project managers and owners, and it's a great one. He asks, how do you handle trade interference when field conditions don't match the original survey?
It's the question that should keep you up at night, because as we just learned, it's not a matter of if it will happen, it's a matter of when.
And when that moment arrives, do you have a protocol? Or do you just have two guys in hard hats yelling at each other while your profit margin literally flies away in the wind?
A terrifying image, but a necessary one. It all comes back to preparation.
It really does.
Well, that's it for this deep dive into the chaotic world of New York City Solar. A huge thank you to the source material from Alexis Lewis for pulling back the curtain for us.
It was a great case study to break down.
Stay curious and maybe check your drawings one last time. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. We hope you found this podcast useful. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to reach out to us at info@alternativesolutions.az. Thanks again for listening, and be sure to tune in for future episodes.